Dr. John Jackson, the Illinois from the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. First off, John, it's so good to talk to you again. You've been well?
Yes, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
John, I kind of get the idea, you know, I was thinking about you last night, that, you know, you come from a time when there was more civility and productivity in politics than there are today. You've seen, really, in your time, an incredible story arc. And unfortunately, towards the end, Dr. Jackson, it appears the ending is not, and they lived happily ever after, compared to the beginning of the story.
Well, that's exactly right. The levels of mistrust of government are at an all-time high. The level of cynicism among the people, the level of sort of pox on both of your house feeling has escalated. And I think a good part of it is related to how much advertisement you now see on television particularly and other media, and how the great portion of it is negative, addressed to tearing down the other person instead of telling what you're all about and what you can do.
Right. And it is a dramatic shift, and it's gone on for a while, and we're always at this fever pitch.
Yeah,
we're
exactly.
Always just churning things up. So let's take a look at this. The races. What can you tell me about when we see our gubernatorial candidates stacked against one another in different scenarios? What can you tell us in the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, Southern Illinois University, Carbondale, the Simon Poll? What's in there on these head-to-heads?
Well, importantly, Rauner is leading Ives by 20 points, 51-31. While it's possible, certainly, for her to catch up, it's going to be difficult, and the only way she can catch up is with an overwhelming ad campaign, and she doesn't have the money for that. She's had enough money to be up and competitive, but he's been on the air for almost a year now, and obviously the incumbent governor dominates the narrative. On the Democratic side, it's a similar story, although not quite as marked. Pritzker is up 31-21 over, Biss, his closest competitor, with Kennedy at 17. Pritzker's been up with lots of ads for a long time. Rauner's been up, of course, as a sidelight with a lot of ads beating up on and attacking Pritzker, so he's up in both the positive and negative ways every time you turn on television. Kennedy's had some advertising that came out lately. Perhaps that will help him some. But again, even though it's just a 10-point margin with a lot undecided, it's still going to be tough for anybody to catch Pritzker.
Right. And you know, it's interesting because I have spoken to Bruce Rauner and J.B. Pritzker specifically about this, both of them. Why are you running a race against Rauner when you've got such a big field of gubernatorial candidates? I'm talking to J.B. Pritzker at that time. And then, you know, Rauner is running against Pritzker, which I kind of understood more when you got that. But still, he's had to recognize Ives. And the shift in advertising more pronounced over the last week, where J.B. Pritzker is not running so many ads going after Rauner as he is now, changing his attention to Kennedy and, to a greater degree, Biss, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's a part of it, because obviously Rauner fears Pritzker the most, because undoubtedly their polls show that Pritzker's the stronger. And similarly, Pritzker's been taking aim at the governor as though he's already won the primary.
Right. Which, you know, and I kind of talked to him about that. I'm like, shouldn't you be? Because, and you know what it reminds me of, John, and you and I both know about this from an intimate level. Remember the race where Joel Fritzler is running for mayor in Carbondale? And there's this big field of mayoral candidates, and it split the vote.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are going, you know, I thought, you know, there were two other candidates there that seemed to be front runners, and neither one of them won once that vote was split so widely. And you look at the Democratic field of candidates, not only in the gubernatorial race, but the attorney general race, there are so many people on the ballot that it lends a great deal of uncertainty to the outcome.
Well, that's right. And on the Democratic side, I expect probably 35% may well win it because it's so divided up. And that's a similar situation with the attorney general race. There's six or eight candidates, a huge field, and it's going to be possible to win that one with about 30% should do it easily, I would think.
Right, and I'm kind of curious about that. It works out because it's interesting. Because, I see the Democrats having the issue of so many people that there's the uncertainty, but the Republicans have a long and illustrious history of destroying each other before the general election, so that you're basically limping into October and November because of the destruction from the primaries. And I don't know if you got that small booklet about getting to know Bruce Rauner in your mail, or you've seen it, have you?
No, I've not seen that.
By the time you're done, you look and say, who's left that's electable?
The Republicans. And that's part of the cynicism and mistrust of government that I was talking about earlier.
All right. Let's talk about this for a moment, because, in the cover sheet, I thought it was interesting to see who the quotes are. Charlie Leonard.
Yeah.
Voters have been more negative about the state of Illinois than the rest of the country since the inception of our poll in 2008.
Right.
It is notable that the state ratings are still 20 percentage points more negative than the national ratings.
Right.
And there's an 18% gap between Illinois and the nation on the right direction option. I call this the Illinois double whammy, federal and state. And if you're watching both houses, you're thinking, wow, how am I going to get from one day to the next?
Well, that's exactly right. This state is extremely unusual in that the culture is to talk about how crooked our political people are and how many governors we've sent to jail. And certainly there's some reality to that, as we all know. On the other hand, most public servants and public officials are not crooks. They're honest and they work hard and they're trying to do a good job for the people they represent. But our culture is just filled with that dominant narrative, and it gets totally reinforced every campaign, because all people do is run against somebody and tear them down. And not surprisingly, the people pick up that they're all a bunch of crooks, and so that distrust and cynicism I talked about earlier is just rampant in Illinois. I've lived in about six or seven states before I moved to Illinois, and I can tell you our culture is different, and it's much more negative in that sense.
I get a lot of people who have moved out of state since this all started in 2008 who say the same thing. Man, you don't understand. It's like getting out of a pressure cooker.
Illinois is not a hellhole, contrary to what you would see on television. There's
right.
A lot of strength to our economy. It's a huge economy, most representative state in the nation. There are a lot of reasons that the political leaders ought to be talking about what's good about the place, and that's the only way you can go out and attract business and industry. You got to have the elevator speech and be able to give the prospect in a few minutes why you should move to Illinois. And most of the time they're talking about how bad off we are.
All right, so let's take a look at this outlook, because I want to share three numbers from the Simon poll.
Right.
In the 1,001 respondents, in all three categories, all 1,001 responded.
Right.
Wrong direction national, 64%. Wrong direction in the state, Illinois, 84%. But in the local area, wrong direction, 37%. So it goes first, the state wrong direction, second, the United States, the nation as a whole, and then third, the local area. What's your takeaway, John?
Well, two things. The old Jeffersonian principle, the closer government is to you, the more you like it, because it becomes people you know and friends and neighbors. And that's true of our local evaluations, whether you live in Chicago or southern Illinois, much more positive than the state. But the difference is that the state is much more negative than the nation. That's quite the opposite from almost any other state. So those two points, I think, are important.
John, it's interesting. I just got a message from an office holder.
Yeah.
Who said, because you and I were talking about the ads, and he says, when will political ads have to abide with the truth in advertising as the real world does? That's interesting.
Well, certainly not before Congress or state legislature takes action. The problem is whether the Supreme Court would let it stand, because we have a very strong First Amendment, and the Supreme Court is convinced that spending money on advertising is a form of free speech. So it's difficult to say whether that would pass muster with the Supreme Court of the United States.
One of the articles breakouts here is also is tax reform. This is probably the one that I really kind of scratched my head at just a little bit more because, well, money's money, right? And people do have more money coming after tax reform. I've talked to a number of them that have said, you know, I've done the math. This year I'm going to get $2,200 more. I mean, I've had a lot of people contact me saying, man, my company's even offered me stock, just giving it to me. But when you look at this, do you support or oppose the tax reform plan passed last December by the Republican congressional majorities that 53% disapprove? That number seemed high to me, especially when 48% of people don't pay taxes.
Yeah, that is, I think, somewhat surprising. I think the 51% disapprove are sort of reacting to the fact that it was the Republican plan. It's probably heavily more Democrat than Republican. I think the fact that it's borrowed money is another thing that at least some people are aware of. And contrary to people talking to you, undoubtedly, a lot of people didn't notice much difference or didn't get a tax cut in their February paycheck. So you do research and you find surprising results.
You do, and I do. And for instance, when you take a look at this other breakout is, are you more or less likely to vote for a Republican congressional candidate in November based on tax reform? And it's even higher, 53% less likely to vote for a Republican candidate because of tax reform. And then more likely is a mere 33%, and apparently 5% don't know, and 6% saying, yeah, I don't, neither.
Yeah, well, the Republicans are going to run the fall campaign on that issue.
Yes,
and
they are.
Try to remind voters. The Democrats are going to run the campaign saying, the rich got very much richer and you didn't get much but the crumbs, and that's going that will be the two narratives of the two parties for the fall. Most people will have forgotten this by the fall, though.
Right. And that is interesting. And because, you know, hey, you and I've been talking for almost 13 minutes. We haven't talked about an October surprise yet.
Exactly. You can't tell. Anything can happen before November.
All right, when you take a look at this body of work as a whole from the Simon Institute, we're talking about 1,001 people. I think there's a 3.21% margin of error. There's some pretty big numbers here when it comes to don't like and do like and favor and oppose. I mean, for instance, marijuana. Because you included that, do you favor the legalization of recreational marijuana if it is taxed and regulated like alcohol? 66% in favor, 32% oppose. I mean, there are a lot of things, including these heads-ups. Do you have a takeaway from this work as a whole?
Yeah, that one has changed more than almost anything we've ever looked at. It changed very rapidly over about a three-year period. Likewise, the only thing comparable has been on acceptance of same-sex marriage. That one went from being opposed. It was about 40% approved, went up to about 60% over a period of about 3 years. And this one has a similar trajectory.
All right. So, you know, what's your thoughts here when it comes to this overall state that we're looking at and these big, strong, big numbers? I mean, kind of my takeaway at some extent is we are farther apart. There's less middle. We are deeply polarized, and it is two very distinct camps with not a lot of overlap.
Well, I think that's exactly right, and you see it in the legislature every day. The legislature dealing with controversial issues is always deeply divided, and thus they have a hard time getting anything done. The old era of you got to come together, meet together in the middle, Lyndon Johnson's half a loaf is better than no loaf at all. Those things are out the window now, and so you mostly have gridlock either in the Congress or in the General Assembly.
Did you learn anything about what's been defined as the blue wave from the activity in Texas? Have you been watching the numbers there?
Yeah, it's possible this will be a wave election, and the Democrats, of course, hope that it will be. I'm still somewhat skeptical. I think the conditions are there, but they're not overwhelming yet. The Republicans got a right to be very nervous. The turnout possibilities, enthusiasm, both favor the Democrats, but the Republicans have got the numbers of incumbents, numbers of safe seats. It's going to be, because of gerrymandering, particularly nationally, very difficult for Democrats to take back the House or the Senate. Not impossible, though.
It's interesting, because when you use the word enthusiasm, what I think of is the words of Kenny Gray, that a person will not walk across the street to vote for you, but they will crawl across the street on broken glass to vote against you.
Well, that's what all that negative advertising's about.
Yeah, and that's the enthusiasm we're talking about. I'm going to go, and I'm going to vote against you. And it's interesting, because I've seen polling numbers who talk about that, and people do. They admit it, that they don't really so much to go vote for somebody as they go vote against someone. And you're right.
Here's where President Trump's approval rating becomes very important, because it's one of the major components in those midterm elections. And currently, it's not very strong. It's been as low as 30 to 35, currently running about 35 to 40. That's one of the major components for why some people, at least, are predicting a Democratic wave.
What do you feel? What's your gut feeling on when Trump won, and he wasn't supposed to win? 91%, 93%. Hillary's going to win. It was a foregone conclusion. The champagne was bought. I mean, it was done, right? I mean, they were picking staff, and then Trump wins. What was the effect on the people and the voting process? You have a gut feeling on the outcome, especially when it comes to doing surveys like this and predicting the future. And I know you've always been really conservative when it comes to predicting the future, because you and I both know it's a great deal more uncertain than we'd like to think. So what's your thoughts there?
Well, at that point, there was a huge enthusiasm and electric shock for the Republican Party. They, for the first time in a long time, control both houses as well as the White House. They controlled the entire government. And the Democrats were totally stunned and demoralized. The subsequent 13, 14 months has changed that remarkably. The question is, has it changed it enough to produce what we call a wave election? I'm not quite there and convinced that's possible yet, for the reasons I cited earlier.
Dr. John Jackson, Paul Simon, Public Policy Institute. If I didn't tell you already, it's always a privilege to get to spend any amount of time talking to you, my friend. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Enjoyed it.